Well, destiny awaits.
Legend has it that there's this massive treasure hidden in some secret vault. And if you go hunting for it, you'd better take any help you can get. Because it's on the weirdest, most dangerous dumpster fire of a world in the universe.
God, I hate this planet.
Oh, did someone say treasure hunt? Well, this should be good, shouldn't it? Let's find out. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Forever Fangirls podcast. I'm Sheila Amato, and along with my wife, Kimberly, we're your hosts, and we're glad you can join us.
And as you heard from the trailer, we are actually going to be tackling Borderlands this episode.
Yes, this film was released on August 9th, 2024 in theaters, and we saw an early opening of it, or an early showing of it.
No, it was a Thursday, so it was like the day before like launched nationwide.
Regardless, our standard spoiler alert is in effect here, as we will be talking about specific plot points and themes. So if you haven't seen Borderlands yet, you will be spoiled.
I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I'm just going to put that out there because the budget's about $100 million for the movie facts, mm-hmm. right? And at the time of this recording, numbers came in only for Friday, and it was $4 million on Friday.
Yeah, it's not good.
And a little tidbits of trivia. According to IMDb, filming was actually completed June 22nd, 2021.
Wow.
But there were reshoots with Tim Miller, as I believe director, as Eli Roth was busy shooting Thanksgiving, I believe. Eli Roth originally shot the movie with a planned R rating, keeping it true to the rated M for mature rating of the video games. But last minute rewrites, heavy edits, reshoots from the other director dialed it back to a PG-13 rating.
Oh, so that usually doesn't bode well, but let's see how it turned out here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the official synopsis basically says, based on the best-selling video game, the All-Star Action Adventure follows a ragtag team of misfits on a mission to save the missing girl who holds the key to unimaginable power.
So the film opens with the voice of Lilith giving background on how the universe was created by powerful beings. They left behind vaults rumored to hold immense power, but they could only be opened with the Child of Iridia and the vault keys. Roland, a former Crimson Raider, frees Tiny Tina and her best friend Krieg from a space station. Turns out, Tiny Tina is a clone created by Atlas, the big bad...
Really? Sorry, yes already.
Anyway, where was I?
The big bad.
The big bad is Atlas, who intends to open the vault and use the power within to rule the universe. Atlas also controls the Crimson Raiders. Now, Atlas decides to hire Lilith, a bounty hunter, to find Tiny Tina and bring her back to him. Lilith, unaware of this, all of the background anyway, initially refuses the job until Atlas transfers a ton of money into her account. Lilith goes to the planet Pandora, where she runs into Claptrap, who was programmed to help her should she ever return to her home world. The two of them find Roland, Krieg, and Tiny Tina, just as the Crimson Raiders do. After a shootout, Lilith finds herself on the wrong side of the Raiders. The five of them continue the mission to open the vault before Atlas or any other vault hunter can open it, even though it could potentially kill Tiny Tina. With the help of the vault expert Tanis, they locate the vault and try to open it, but nothing happens. Turns out Lilith had blocked out why her mother sent her away from Pandora when she was a child. She is the final piece of the key to open the Iridian vault. When she does open it, Lilith is transformed into Firehawk, the mythical protector of Pandora. She gains supernatural powers to save her friends in the final battle, and in the end brings back order to Pandora, as was prophesied. All while looking hot doing it.
I'm just going to say, brings back order, sort of. And yes, looks hot doing it.
Okay.
Figuratively and literally.
Yes. So, let's talk about the good.
Okay, this is going to be very controversial. Mm. Okay, I do have some issues with the casting of the film.
Okay.
I'm going to say that, like, I would have preferred people that, you know, fit a little bit more as far as the physical manifestation of the video games. However, that's also pretty much impossible.
Yeah.
So, I didn't mind it. I actually think the characters and the actors portraying them did their best to bring the characters that I remember playing and talking to and having myriads of conversations with to life.
And for me, because I don't play the video games, I mean, the only person that I really knew was Claptrap, because every time you play it, I see him like
dancing across the screen.
Not dancing across the screen, just doing something crazy or stupid in the video game. But
that's true.
I'm just like, okay, at least I know that character, but he's CGI.
Yeah, and when, you know what's funny is in the ending credits, just as a little side note about Claptrap, when he's like, no, you want to see me dance? All I keep thinking of is Borderlands 3, I believe it's 3, when it's loading, you see like little Claptrap dancing across the screen.
So they did bring the elements of the game into it.
Yeah, but just, you know, quick breakdown. I remember Roland being very stoic and very like straightforward, straight shooter type character. And Kevin Hart kind of did that. So, you know, people say he kind of looks bored and doesn't want to be there. And I'm like, but that's the character of the game I played.
Okay. Well, for me, he was actually more subdued than the normal Kevin Hart that I see in like other movies.
Well, yeah.
So I'm like, oh, okay. So he's like being in character, at least for this movie.
And I also give them credit for picking up on the fact that, hey, he is shorter than what we would anticipate with the video game and having played it.
Yeah,
and
that was actually a funny line.
They have the Tiny Tina line where she goes, what, they sent their shortest, you know, raider in this.
Yeah.
I at least appreciated the fact that they put a little spin on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tannis is Tannis. I mean, in the game, she's quirky. She says the wrong thing at times. She always is just random. It's like vault over everything, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, her character, at least to me, is a scientist, so it seemed to fit.
Yeah, and Jamie Lee Curtis really did give me what I remember playing in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with that too. Krieg was smash and kill Krieg. I mean, that's just what I remember.
Okay. I was like, wow, that guy's tall.
Yeah, especially the pictures of him next to Kevin Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Claptrap is what he is in the game. He's the comedic relief. He gets into trouble. He sends you on random missions to get like a new antenna, whether it's a spork or an umbrella or a hanger or a spoon or his normal stick. You know, whatever it is, he sends you on these random missions and he always acts like he's the reason everybody's safe. And I liked it, you know. Yeah. And the fact is, yes, it was Jack Black, but he sounded like Claptrap to me. And I know that that's probably computer processing and everything else, but still.
I did hear some of Claptrap in some of the dialogue. So
of course you would hear Claptrap in the dialogue.
Not
you mean
Claptrap.
Jeff?
Jack Black. Jack Black, Claptrap. You know, yeah. Same difference.
I did too. You're right. You could hear the nuances within his voice in there. Mm-hmm. But it just, it's Claptrap.
Mm-hmm.
I had no problem with it.
Okay, so for me, it's a blank slate, right? Because, again, I'm not playing video games. Didn't know anything about any of the characters, but when Kate Blanchett comes on screen, it's like, oh, you don't want to mess with her.
Oh, definitely.
So I'm like, yee!
Yeah, and she looked hot.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, she was powerful. She leads the film.
She's very stoic.
Yeah, but it felt like she walked out of the game.
Mm.
You know, for her, I know people were saying it wasn't the right casting, but the way she brought it across, I kind of felt like it's as if she walked out of the game and was on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And going into a little bit more, I think the costume designs did an excellent job. Sets were excellent. I mean, it really looked like Pandora from the games.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it very much. And I guess my point is, yes, the casting maybe could have been different, but it still worked for me.
Yeah. And for me, not knowing, again, anything about the game, it was fine. I followed the storyline, which we will talk about later.
Yes.
But it was fine.
Yeah, it's doable.
Yeah.
And then you can't discuss a video game movie without bringing up game connections.
I think this is all you.
This is going to be all me, and I'm going to rattle through them because I was giggling at certain points, going, ooh. And I'm tapping my wife going, I have that in the game. Oh, I have that.
And I was like, shh, be quiet.
Talking.
I'm trying to watch the movie.
So in the beginning, when you get on the bus and it's Marcus, I love that because in the beginning, I always remember you get on the bus and like clap. I believe it was in the first game I ever played, which was Borderlands, I want to say 2 first. Because my friend recommended it. And I was like, okay, cool. We'll play online, whatever. And I remember having to go through a certain amount of the game before you can co-op play, which means basically playing with your friends online. Okay.
Okay.
So I remember if I'm wrong, please, audience listening, audience, correct me. I believe there was the bus ride where you have to do a bus ride. And then like, I want to say it was Claptrap explaining everything to you, but it might've been Marcus. But I remember a bus ride at one point has been referenced, whether it be DLC or the beginning of game two. But Marcus always like explains DLC as well, like the stories.
Okay.
So I was laughing that and you have to sit through these things. You can't skip them. So I was laughing. Oh, that's why
she's like, I don't need to hear this. I'm not. Okay.
And that's why I was laughing. Cause I'm like, okay, no matter how many times I tried to skip through the intro of one of the DLCs, you have to sit through it. And he's like, no can do, already started. Mm. And it's just, it was such a quirky little thing. I'm not 100% sure about the games, but I just remember the bus. I don't know if it was in the trailer, whatever. But I was giggling about that. The guns, where the barrel was spinning, I have that in the game. They just look so cool, all of them. The set, like I said, it looks really like Pandora. The vehicles look awesome.
The only thing that I remember about Borderlands when I quickly glance at the TV is like just barren desert land. And that was in the film. So
yeah.
That was actually kind of cool.
I mean, the Skag look like Skag. I mean, the little four-legged beastie things, they're Skags. I would have liked to see the variation of Skags where it was like the electric, the fire, or whatever, but I understand that kind of didn't have a purpose in this version of the game. But it was cool to see, you know, Tiny Tina's little bunny bombs. And again, I do have some concerns about Tiny Tina, but keeping her love of explosives, blowing everything up, the arguments where it's like, you know, Roland and Tina's connection in the game is strong. It was nice to see them have a connection here. Him saying, I didn't say big explosions. She's like, you said little explosions. Like, I said no explosions. It's just that type of banter is cute and it works. The blink and you'll miss it at the end. I did see Ellie, which is Moxie's daughter. But supposedly Mr. Hammerlock is also in the game somewhere, but it's a blink and you'll miss it. But one of the coolest, absolute awesomeness that I was hitting your forearm for, and you finally just moved away from me. When they put the masks on, when they're walking through the city center on Pandora, and they have all the wanted posters, which look similar to how they do the wanted posters in the game, which I also thought was cool. But the masks you wear are actually heads you can switch your character to. And that's what they were. Like, I have a TV head. I've got like all these different things.
Oh my goodness.
And they're in the game. And I was like, yee! So the little things made me happy like that.
Well, I mean, you would think that in a movie like this, they have to bring elements of the game into it. That's the whole point.
Well, yeah, but we've also seen video game movies where it's video game and title only.
Well, then it's a good thing that there were quite a bit of video game influence then in the film.
Yes.
Any other good? Shall we move into themes?
I think we can move into the themes.
All right. So you actually wrote this down that greed is bad.
Yes.
And for me, it's the knowing when enough is enough. Right. So it's the same.
It is.
It's two sides of the same coin.
Where I go into a little bit of the, and maybe it's because I have played all the games, including the pre-sequel, which is hysterically funny. There's a lot of depth in this game about money and corporate greed and bigger, badder, best. If anybody is listening and has played the games, there's even the Handsome Jack character has a casino. And it's all about once you get in, basically, you're so in debt because you never win that you can never leave.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And it's all about money, power, and control. So basically synonymous with everyday life that we're facing currently, right?
Yeah.
There's billionaires who have so much and they don't want to be taxed.
They still want more.
And they still want more. There's like you said, there's never that limit or that understanding of I now have multi-generational wealth and I'm okay. Atlas has everything. He's got enough. He's literally been through how many clones of Tina? We aren't really given a number, but we're given the idea and the notion that they're more than one. They've suffered, et cetera, et cetera. So we know that there's power, we know that there's greed, and they don't care. They want to open that vault, and they don't care if she dies.
Right.
They don't care if Tina becomes one with the key. They want what's in the vault, because in their mind, it is the most powerful weapon, and they're going to use it to control the universe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the line that Lilith utters in the vault to Atlas, saying, "I have something you will never have. I have enough." That line just resonated so much. I was like, oh my God, that's the point. You know the riches that you have if you know what enough is.
And let's not get it twisted. You know, money is necessary to survive.
It's a tool.
But it's a tool. Exactly. It's a tool. And it's all about elevating themselves to an area where they are invincible. But yeah. Even then, when you've reached that level, like several billionaires in this country have, then what?
It's still not enough.
Because you're not happy inside. Whereas Lilith is telling him, look, I have that. I have enough.
Yep.
I'm okay. She's now got Tina. She's got Krieg. She's got Roland.
She's got her found family, which is another theme.
And I was going to let you take it from there.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that Roland and Tiny Tina basically became like, Roland became her father figure of sorts, because Atlas never was a father, at least in the story and how I received it. Krieg, I guess, is her pal, has always been there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when Lilith enters the picture, she also takes Tiny Tina under her wing, almost as like mentoring her, because she's an orphan, much like how Lilith is an orphan. And so, you know, that whole parallel thing. And then you have Tanis, and then there's that tension between Tanis and Lilith because of the backstory there, where Tanis basically took her away.
Yeah.
But at her mother's urging. It's a big, messy family.
And then there's Claptrap, who's basically like the puppy dog, if you think about it.
It's funny because it's like he's unwillingly tethered to Lilith, but he doesn't want to be anywhere else.
Yeah. When you meet Claptrap in the game, he's like, oh, come on, adventure. You're a vault hunter and I'm going to save you and I'm going to take care of you. And brags about all these things he's done, but you've done them all in the game. And, you know, but it's funny. And it's like, he doesn't want to be away from you, but he also doesn't want to be around you because he can get hurt.
So he's like a little kitty cat?
He's a doggy.
Well, okay.
No, if it was a cat would have just knocked everybody over and won. The puppy is like, it's like all bark, no bite puppy.
Ah, okay.
You know, like Sassy was. Sassy, our puppy, was an amazing dog. I loved her, but she would bark from behind your legs.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because she would want everybody to know she had a very loud voice, but she didn't want to get hurt. I don't blame her, especially if it was a bigger dog.
Right.
But neither here nor there. The found family surprisingly kind of works.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that something that's also in the game or not very much?
The thing is, and this is where the game is very different, you have four people that can play.
Just
so,
four?
Yeah. So okay. When you're playing with four people in a co-op, the relationship is kind of found family almost because you're playing with your friends.
Got it. Okay.
You can't play as Tina.
Okay. Can you play as Tanis?
No.
Okay. And you can play as Lilith or no?
You can play as Lilith.
Okay.
You can play as Roland. You could play as Krieg. Krieg was, I believe, a DLC ad later on down the line.
Okay.
Claptrap, I was just curious. You can't play as either.
Okay. So any other themes that we want to talk about?
I mean, being true to who you are, you know, Lilith fully accepting who she is, Tina accepting who she is, Roland accepting his position, Krieg being Krieg. And I mean, Claptrap will never. Claptrap is just going to stay in his world.
As you were talking, I was actually thinking about how all of them are somewhat reluctant heroes or the anti-hero, right? That they really don't want to be, they don't want to be in the forefront, but they find themselves there and they do the right thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of am drawn to characters like that. So
I can see that.
Okay, so I guess we can go into the bad then.
Okay.
I already mentioned it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So my record scratch is the fact that the story is thin.
Mm-hmm.
There's really, it's very straightforward. There's not, there's
very straightforward. It's that's just, being kind.
It, it was a very, very basic story. And even so, though, I actually did kind of enjoy watching it because I just took it for what it was.
Okay. The characters are thinner than I'd like. They do have some backstory in the game, and they could have done more with the characters to develop them.
Okay.
I think my biggest issue with the story is Borderlands 2 is such a phenomenal game. I know you needed to have foundation to create the characters. I just think they could have and should have used Handsome Jack as the villain. I think they could have developed the characters a little bit. They could have done more with it if they used Handsome Jack, who's like the best villain in the game, in my opinion.
You know, for me, not knowing anything else, I didn't know that there was another villain that could have stepped in. You know, when you told me we were going to go see it, I was like, oh God, here we go.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually glad that I went to see it with you because I enjoyed it for what it was.
I think my issue overall, though, is the fact that they had an A-list cast and they made a story so thin that you don't know enough about the characters. And those characters are going to sell a part too. It really, I think, would have been better if they presented it with the best possible aspects of all the games in one.
As you're talking, I'm like, well, it can't be like The Last of Us, because The Last of Us had a rich story.
The Last of Us also was a television series.
I know.
So it had a lot of time to spread it out.
Exactly. And I'm saying that there were a lot of layers for that. Whereas for this, it was I thought it was just like a one-shot deal. Mm-hmm. You're saying that perhaps there was going to be a sequel.
No. I'm not inferring that there was any idea. I'm saying If they wanted to create this as a series, if they had made it as a beginning film of a series, or even if it was a standalone one shot, they should have taken the best of all three games and made it powerful and then utilized the talents of the cast and given them a little bit more meat on the bones to play with.
I mean, for all we know, that was the direction when Eli Roth was directing it.
Maybe we should ask for the Eli Roth cut.
Maybe. We don't know how it would have turned out if it stayed.
Villain is still not Handsome Jack.
For me, I was fine with it because it was entertaining.
Well, I didn't say I wasn't entertained.
I'm just saying that for me, I didn't have all of that in the back of my mind. So I'm just like, I'm enjoying it for what it is.
Okay.
So any other bad then?
No, for me.
Okay. So let's talk about the cute. I mean, we mentioned some cute already. But
Tiny Tina's bunny balls.
Oh my God. You were
Bob.
you were bouncing in your chair.
I was so giddy with that.
I just adored Claptrap. I mean, the fact that in the scene where he was basically taking all of the bullets of the deranged people.
The psychos.
There you go. And then he basically was expelling the...
He was pooping him out.
Like, okay, I know that's like a bathroom joke, but that was funny.
It was. You and I were giggling.
Yes. The one-liners, I thought, just stole the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed that very much.
Are we good with cute?
I think so, if you don't have anything else.
I am good.
All right, so... I guess that ends our discussion of Borderlands. Now it's time for our Forever Fangirls rating. Drum roll, please. We rate Borderlands 2024 3 stars.
Can it develop some legs to success, dear?
I don't think they're getting a fair shake, but...
Well, I'm just going to say that people are going to consider and reference this film for years to come as a massive flop. There's too much negative out there to justify audience members spending their hard-earned money. Because if you see that 9 out of 10 think it's garbage, why are you going to spend $10 to $20 at the theater?
Especially like for someone like me who didn't play the video games, I'm glad that you did take me to it. Let me just say that.
Yeah, I do think it's going to do better on video on demand and streaming.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will bolster it. You know, maybe it'll get a cult-like status at that point when it reaches everybody. I'm not sure, but I know that this film is not going to be in theaters for very long.
Yeah.
That's the impression I get.
Yeah. It's a shame because, like I said, I don't think that it's going to be given a chance because it is rated PG-13 and it's a video game.
If Deadpool was rated PG-13, Deadpool is not Deadpool.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I think that's the biggest thing that's hampering us.
But again, there's history there with Deadpool that it was always rated R to begin with.
But what I'm saying is if the very first Deadpool that ever came out, if they insisted on it being PG-13, when the content is darker, when he's supposed to be an R, you think that the original Deadpool film is as good as it was?
No, it wouldn't be. There's a reason why it had to be R.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think we mentioned this, that the box office numbers that we have is only for Friday, and it's only 4 million. So that is not a very good start at all.
So yeah, it's not off to a good start. But as a player and a fan of the games, I really don't think there was any way this film would be as good as the game for several reasons, but I'm just going to bring up my personal two. The first is that when I play Borderlands, I'm in control. Like, I know where I want to go. I know the missions I want to do. I play it my way. I can run and gun. I can loot. I can do whatever. And the second is I play with my friends. So we've got a misfit tag, like ragtag team of four of us. We run around, and by playing with them and laughing and joking, it elevates the enjoyment. In other words, you're never going to please everyone with any interpretation of the game, especially one like this.
Because it's always going to be different.
It's always going to be different. This is simply a fan service film. And just like we loved Deadpool and Wolverine for just giving us fan service and giving us what we wanted, in my opinion, this film kind of did the same thing. The story really doesn't matter, even though I really wish they would have used Handsome Jack or a really good villain, but whatever.
Okay.
It's in the cameos and the fight scenes and the references to the source material that made me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of at a loss when I keep reading the reviews and the comments about performances being stoic or being boring or looking like they don't want to be there. And I'm like, but that's the character. Like, I don't get it. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. We're entitled to ours. But I'm kind of am confused because basically they gave us the game.
Uh-huh.
In my opinion, I went in expecting nothing from this because the trailers didn't look that good. And I was pleasantly surprised and I enjoyed the silly fun 2 hours. And yes, again, changes were made that I wish they didn't make, Tiny Tina. But I'm going to enjoy this film again when it's on streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that more people see it and just enjoy it for what it's meant to be, which is just a silly, fun 2 hours.
Yeah. So throughout the review of this, I've been saying that I don't play video games.
You sure?
Yes, I do not play video games. And when the trailer came out, I knew, and maybe slightly dreaded.
No, you dreaded it.
That I had to see this movie because you love this game.
I do, but you dreaded it. Even on the cruise when we were on vacation, when I said when we get home, we have to see Borderlands, you were like, oh.
See, I blocked that from my mind. Right? But I mean, to be honest, I'm glad we saw it. And I have mentioned that throughout the review as well, because I found myself laughing at the antics of Claptrap. And despite the thin storyline, I just had a fun time watching it. Will it win the Oscars? No. Will it entertain? Yes, at least it did for me. And that's all I ever ask for in a film that's based on a video game that I have no affinity or knowledge of. No offense.
None taken.
Okay.
But just do me a favor. When you see me playing Borderlands,
uh-huh.
Don't ask a million questions about it now. Because the movie's very different.
Yes.
Well, not very, but different enough.
Yes, I understand that. The only other point that I want to try to make here is, you know, you had mentioned about the negative reviews and comments.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if the reason people are doing that is because the lead is a woman.
Hmm.
And it's a trend, right? We've reviewed movies where people are just panning like Captain Marvel or the Marvels even, right? Captain Marvel made $1 billion at the box office.
Yes.
But it still was not good enough.
And that's when people keep saying it's because it rode the high of Infinity War and Endgame, but they don't say that about any of the other films.
Right. And I'm like, the story was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it was a great film. The Marvels are now finding their footing and their niche with streaming and Disney Plus.
And I wonder if they might have done better had they had a promotional period. Because remember, the strike was going on.
Correct.
So they had no promotional period. And the negative reviews overwhelmed, so people weren't going to spend their hard-earned money.
But to bring it back to Borderlands, I do hope that audiences do go see this because it is a fun movie. And like Kimmy said, I will definitely watch it again when it comes on streaming services because I had so much fun watching it. And I actually saw a clip of Eli Roth, who said that his goal for this movie was he wanted audiences to just think that they've had the best time at a movie theater. And maybe it's not the best time, but I had a good time.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the best time, but I can say I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And again, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I know there's a lot of people who are not going to like the films that we like and vice versa, and that's okay. But I think in regards to, say, women in leads, I think the way some people go about it, not all, some, where it's more about the person than it is the poor film. Like, I am seeing reviews on Borderlands where it is people just don't like the film.
Mm-hmm.
So they are making comments about the film, but a lot of people do say, Lilith this, Tan is that, and it's all about Cate Blanchett and Jamie Lee Curtis and casting.
Mm.
And so I don't know.
Okay.
So your point, I would be interested to know more about that. I wish there was a way we could do a study and figure that out.
Well, maybe this is very unscientific, obviously, but it just seems that when you do see the reviews and all of that, you see a pattern. At least I see a pattern. And so that's why I wanted to just bring that up.
Hmm.
But anyway.
I do wish there would be more research done on films that are panned and films that are elevated and what the cast structure is.
Mm.
Anyway, that is going to be our show for today, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to our review of Borderlands. If you'd like to reach us here at the Forever Fangirls podcast, we have several ways you can do that. You can go to our website at foreverfangirls.com and find links to our Discord, social media, a contact form, and even easy access to subscriptions and past episodes.
So until next time, stay safe. Be kind, and remember, like any entertainment venture, sometimes the best ideas never land as we intended. So like Jamie Lee Curtis posted on Threads, let's celebrate the accomplishments of this film's release. Let's celebrate the fact that someone was willing to take a chance on something new instead of rehashing something old. She ended that post with the phrase, chaos loves company. Embrace the chaos that is the vault of life. You never know what you'll uncover when you do.